Welcome to the Bicast, a podcast for the bisexual community. This month's roundtable is on, frankly, how to treat each other. We're bombarded by hate and hostility from both outside our community and inside of it. When we experience it from within, it only serves to eat away at our community altogether. Joining us is RJ Aguiar, who has a helpful new video on how to comment. It speaks to YouTubers, but can be applied to any community, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, really can.
Thank you.
Welcome. I'm John.
And I'm Allison Wilbert.
I'm Lynette.
Hi, everybody. Nice to meet everyone.
Nice to meet you.
Hi.
Thank you.
We love your videos. They are adorable.
Thank you.
So just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm RJ Aguiar, originally from Tampa, Florida. I'm a recent transplant to L.A., a professional YouTuber, also a writer, and Hispanic, bisexual, and just loving Beyonce, as I call it, boy fiance, that's our words for each other, and happy doggy daddy.
Yeah, very cute doggy. What's the name again?
Dobby. We named him after Harry Potter. We had very many Harry Potter based names picked out, and then when we adopted him, we tried calling him with all the different ones, and Dobby was the one that he responded with.
He was definitely a Dobby.
Yes.
So tell us about some of your videos. You and Will just did a really interesting one. That was pretty fun.
Which one are you referring? Are you talking to about just the tips?
Just the tips.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just the tips is a dating and sex advice series that I run on my channel. The most recent episode was just talking about how to kind of keep the spice or the excitement alive in the sex life in a relationship. And I mean, one of the reasons why I started Just the Tips just in general is just because people are so puritanical sometimes, or so afraid to talk about sex that it's just like, I mean, come on, let's create a forum to kind of talk about sex, because it's something we all do, but most people's, you know, exposure to sex is, you know, on the internet through porn, and it's like, that creates a little bit of an unrealistic picture, so let's see if we might be able to create a forum that's a little bit more realistic in its expectations.
It's very good.
Can you tell us a little bit about your video, How to Comment? What brought it about? I like the Five Commandments. Can you go over those for us?
Commandment one was don't be a dick. First and foremost, commandment two is do not say anything that you would not say to the person in front of a group. Commandment three was, be mindful of where you are, which is on their video, not yours. Commandment four was read your entire comment back to yourself before posting it. And commandment five, seriously, don't be a dick.
Seriously, don't be a dick.
When Will and I first started our daily vlogs, there was this really great sense of community. It was one of the reasons why I kind of kept repeating the mantra of we don't have the most subscribers, we have the best subscribers. And as the channel kind of grew and kind of started to take off and to sort of go into the next level, there was just this whole other like group of people that were just saying nothing but negative things and were getting really, really hostile. And it's, there's just this, I've noticed in general, there's just kind of this rising tide of negativity in the comment section of a whole bunch of people's videos. And it's something that a lot of creators that I knew or that were friends with were just noticing and kind of getting tired of. And what struck me was just how, so many people or so many fellow creators just was like, oh, you know, I guess that's just comes with the territory. And I think one of the things that sparked my video was like, no, it doesn't have to be like that's we don't have to sit there and take it lying down.
Yeah,
it seems there's a culture of this, RJ, that, you know, I know I've had to turn comments off on all sorts of things like our blog and our web pages because it's just so abusive. And you're right. The five rule one and five apply, and people just don't apply it very well.
I feel like rule one and five, really, if you boil it down to all the rest of the comments, are just variations on commandment one and five.
Yeah.
But people need you to be more specific.
Well, you know, and it brings up a whole thing about abusing to carrying it way too far, because I know that Lacey Green is just having a really rough time right now.
Oh, my God. Well, that's just Sam Pepper's fan base for you, or any of those sort of mindless fangirl fan bases. They're just, you know, the minute you say anything against their, you know, their beloved idol, then it's, you know, game over.
Yeah. Well, she seems to be dealing with it, but it still it shouldn't have to be that way.
Yeah, no, you know? For sure, I agree. Please go ahead.
Oh no. Well, there's a couple of things that goes with that. Is there is gender and sexual orientation policing, which is something you shouldn't do, and then there's social policing, which where do we as a community stop putting up with things like rape culture? And fight back.
Oh, yeah.
So, and that, I think, is something that we should be doing as individuals all over the world. So
I think one of the things that kind of that fuels both of those things, like policing and sort of is just how far people are willing to go to kind of protect their own status quo.
Mm-hmm.
And the sense that, like, the minute that someone comes along and poses something that's a threat to the way they sort of see things, it automatically sort of puts them on the defensive and makes them more hostile.
Yeah, I agree. There is a right way and a wrong way. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you want to say something, John?
Yeah, I was going to say that one of the problems with typing is that it's really easy to misinterpret what someone's typed.
Oh, yes.
And go off on it. And this has been a problem ever since the beginnings of Usenet and typing messages in a conference, which in those days it wasn't the numbers of people that are on today, but someone could type something and it was misinterpreted, and it would start what we would call in those days flame war. We don't use the term flame war anymore, but
yes,
that would be when a comment somebody made would get all the traffic, and you would see, you know, like 1,000 messages in that Usenet board associated with it, with everybody's perspective. And what it would usually come down to would be a couple people just fighting, and it would get into all caps.
Oh, for sure. Oh, yeah.
We see the same thing now, but different.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I think it kind of illustrates. I'm lucky enough to have one of my degrees be in communication and mass communication. In the sense, very little of communication is the actual substance of what you say. You know, so much of it is also based on, you know, tonality and body language and context and that sort of thing. And having just the text of boiling it down to just text, really kind of illustrates that point and how easy it is to kind of misinterpret, because everybody's bringing their own experience and their own moment before whenever they sort of come across a piece of text. And I think that's also one of the reasons why you start seeing so many emojis and use of like acronyms and just, you know, the LOLs and stuff like that. Is you almost have to sort of invent new forms of punctuation just to kind of make up for that lack of, you know, face-to-face, you know, or the lack of cues you get when you do communicate with someone face-to-face, or even verbally.
Exactly.
There's also in our communities, in the LGBTQI community, I think there's also another layer that individuals are constantly attacked as it stands from just the hetero and cis community. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a huge defensiveness that as we start to make a comment, or as we start to, you know, put things out there, all of a sudden we're not only attacking those who are fatally against us, example, focus on the family of Dobson and their mess, but we're taking that very rapidly right into anybody who's on our page. Like, Facebook is kind of hard because, you know, you got 1,000 people and you can't really remember where the 1,000 people came from.
Very true.
So
yeah.
I literally have a list that tells me who these people are on my Facebook now, because I flamed somebody not realizing who they were. And not that I felt bad over the opinion, but I could have handled it differently and it would have came off a lot better. But I have to keep notes on who's on my Facebook page, because you don't know who they are.
Yeah. I recently ran into that same problem on Tumblr. I wasn't really particularly sorry for what I said.
Yeah.
But it was the way I went about it.
Oh, yeah.
It was completely wrong. I was very tired and worn out, and I was very defensive of my organization and the people I work with and myself. And I used the Bicast account, which was a mistake because it involved everybody who works for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's commandment four. That's commandment four. You got to make sure you read stuff out before you, you know, it saves a lot of headaches. I can't count the number of times that I have written a very strongly worded response and almost hit send or almost hit post. And then I read it back and I'm just like, too much, too hard.
I'm finding out the more that people know who I am and stuff like that. I don't really have that option or that luxury anymore. I'm not afforded that anymore. You know, it's just I can't do those things anymore. You know, it's just, you know, you're spotlighted.
In the past, there have been many attempts to make you read back what you've written before you send it. I remember there were plugins for email that would do that for you. People use them for about a week or two and then abandon them. It's a good, you know, world peace is a good idea too. But I also think that one of the problems that we have in these public forums is that we have trolls and we have professionals.
Yeah.
And we have non-professionals. There are trolls that are just there to make sure that communities are broken up. When a really nice, good social community is formed, it's a threat to interests. And so when that happens, that's when a lot of times professional trolls come in and really start making trouble just so that people abandon that community. Because most people, when they, you know, most people, when the noise starts, they just go away from it. They walk away. They just don't want to be bothered with it.
Well, you know, that seems like a pretty human response.
Yeah, and it is. And, you know, I think one of the things that doesn't get done well enough is actually administering comment threads so that the communication stays on that even keel and the social community doesn't feel threatened or doesn't feel like it's just a bunch of noise now.
You know, that's one of the problems we see in a lot of the bi-positive articles that are being put out, is there are people that I'm sure are professional trolls and doing those, you know, the really horrible negative comments, and there doesn't seem to be much moderation.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know,
I think built into a lot of forums is tools at least for self-policing. As far as like a lot of forums, especially on some of the bigger social networking sites, you have the ability to flag or do that sort of thing. But yeah, I definitely agree that that's a lot of that. Well, there needs to be better moderation.
Well, we even take it directly to the editor sometimes if it's really bad.
We went over this week, and actually there's an article about a trans woman that was murdered in the Philippines.
Oh, yeah.
And a Chase Manhattan employee put up how he was excited that she had died and that's what should happen. He may not have a job tomorrow.
Good.
So, you know, this is the kind of thing. You know, social media takes responsibility, and if you aren't being responsible, then you can pay the consequence.
Well, and that's what I mean by social policing, that we have a police department and all of that, but it is constructed by a social construct too, and we have to actually take things like this and say, how do we act socially with each other?
A very good, it's you can't succumb to that whole that mindset again. That it's just like, oh, this is just part of the, you know, the atmosphere. Like, no, you don't. We do not have to put up with it. Like, there's no requirement that people, you know, and YouTubers get kind of victim blamed all the time whenever we get kind of bombarded with, hey, well, oh, well, then just don't be on YouTube, you know. No, fuck you. There's no requirement that says that I have to sit here and take your brat.
Damn straight.
Exactly.
Damn straight.
Yeah, I think another thing we have to remember is about sock puppets. You know, following some of the Twitter wars that go on, there was one point in which I was directed to 4chan's B conference.
Broke the first and second rules of B. Don't talk about B.
Yeah. Well, actually, I found the thread that was actually going in and attack the sock puppets that were attacked. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all these things that you did when you created your profile, you know, you want it to be a black woman and you want it to be really angry to make it look like all the black women in this particular Twitter war were just these angry black women who were saying really crazy things, but they weren't. They were actually sock puppets being controlled by, you know, young white men who are really bigoted and prejudiced and want to make trouble. We have to remember that sometimes when we engage in these things. That the person that we're talking to is not who they look like or say they are. They could be somebody completely different or just trying to cause trouble.
Oh.
That happens a lot with the trans community and the TERS. They pose a lot of different things and horrible things. Horrible, evil things that hurt people very badly. I mean, seriously. And that's beyond just being an ass.
These are people who, not to get too far off into the TERF world, but these are people who are exceptionally malicious. They intend to do harm while claiming that they're not trying to do anything. They're just psycho patients.
That's you touched on a very interesting thing too, because I feel like that's a part of trolling. Like, everybody talks about trolling as far as like the practices of trolling, but not a lot of people discuss what might compel someone to do that. And I definitely feel like what's sort of missing in that whole discussion is, I guess, that the premise that, if certain people had access to the sort of mental health care that they need, then we might see fewer and fewer people like this all across, the net, the web.
I think that may be right, AJ. I'm sorry. I think
everyone does that. I just want to say, like, everyone that I've ever met has called me AJ at least once, so it's okay.
Oh, sorry.
my own mother has done it to me,
RJ.
So don't worry. It's
okay. RJ. I will get that straight. Probably next week, but I'll get that straight.
Just because my last name starts with A, it throws everybody off.
You know, we went through a name change process being trans. We can fix that for you.
Oh, true.
Never mind.
So AJ is AJ is his dead name, Allison.
Oh no! Really? I'm sorry. Forgive me for trolling you. Anyway,
no, that's fine.
You know, it's one of those things where even if people had access to mental health care, I think recognition that they have a problem is the first issue. And I don't think, TERFs and the trolls actually recognize that they have an issue. They believe they are just as sane as all the rest of us, which obviously they are not. And,
It's not even necessarily about being sane versus being insane. Like, everybody has stuff to deal with. And, anger, of course, being one of them. And anger also being one of those things that your average person, unless they for some reason end up, seeing some sort of therapist, they're not really given the tools to deal with that. It's always easier to kind of shift blame or shift, I guess, psychological discomfort externally and kind of take it out on something that's outside of yourself rather than dealing with it inside your own sort of psyche and your own consciousness.
And the internet offers that opportunity.
Of course.
Because it's safe. It's safe. You're not actually being face-to-face confrontational.
Exactly. You're anonymous, and you're insulated from the consequences of what you do because you never had to deal with this person on a face-to-face basis.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Alrighty. So let's talk about this. There is a right way and wrong way to get your point across, as we talked. And I did talk about the recently how I did it the wrong way. But since we started the podcast, I've heard numerous times of attacks on character and our opinions for no valid reason. And well, there is no valid reason to do that, period. Virtually making these groups unsafe spaces. Most admins are volunteers like us, and some of us have limited time, but we're pretty dedicated. And this is really more of a statement than a question. If you are admitting and on a page or a group and name-calling abusive language begin, you really need to intervene, first verbally, and then if it doesn't, then there are other steps that you can go to. There are other things that you can do. It doesn't matter who is right or wrong at that point. When it starts getting down to accusations and abuse, it's time to stop it. And frankly, this infighting will break our community, as I said before.
Reach.
So it's, and I have bought into this myself, so that's why I say don't buy into it. Take like a third party and get it to stop. If it does not stop, then get rid of the problem altogether.
It's tempting. It's always tempting to kind of buy into it, especially just because the emotional parts of your brain are almost completely distinct from the rational parts of your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very difficult sometimes when that emotional part takes over, because then, screw what the rational part says, Again, I've been in and out of therapy, thankfully, for different parts of my life, and I'm very thankful that I did, because there's, you pick up stuff like this, and it definitely proves useful.
Yeah, I've been in therapy too. And when I remember it, it's very useful.
Yeah.
But yes, I think what it is that it's not so important to prove your point anymore or anyone else's point, or the point is how we're treating each other.
Oh, for sure.
And that's it. And when it starts turning into something abusive, it's time for the conversation to stop.
Or at least for there to be a pause button put on it. And to give people time to sort of calm down and have the situation de-escalate. And I think the example you gave earlier on about, like, even sane, rational, normal, reasonable people can get angry and have, you know, emotions sort of overwhelm their reason. One of the reasons why, you know, it's a harmful mindset almost to sort of dismiss trolling as just, you know, oh, it's just a handful of crazy people. No, everybody has the capacity to lose their shit.
Exactly.
You know, and that's true. Okay, first off, that I want to acknowledge that's true, but how many people do it as a professional troll?
Oh, yeah.
We have people that are consistently in our face, and it's not just once or twice. I mean, it is very, very consistent. In fact, I have people who stalk my posts.
Yeah.
And like on Facebook, you can get rid of them. On Twitter, you can ban them. On YouTube, you can, you know, do some things. But, well, you can ban them. But after a while, I mean, how many do you ban? I think I've got 1,200 or 1,300 people banned. I do.
Yeah.
I seriously have
many
that many.
Takes.
Yeah, I mean, I have quite a few people banned. I have a whole banned list because of just ugly crap that people throw at us.
You can't treat all trolling the same, too. Like, there's definitely different variety. There's different flavors of it as far as
chocolate flavor.
chocolate flavor trolls.
Sprinkles.
Yeah, exactly. There's the trolling, or that's, you know, you kind of your standard just all caps. People who, you know, are overcome by emotion and sort of the heat of the moment. And then you get the much more cold, calculated sort of trolling.
Like our governor, Chris Christie? Talk about a troll.
Oh, my
but,
God.
You know, when you get into places like when you, like, for example, Elia Cruz, he does a lot of really great articles.
I love him. He's so, he's so great.
I love him. Well, you know, there are people that have targeted him in the comments who just say really horrible, awful things. And part of the reason we go in and comment now is so that the rest of the community or people out there that feel alone know that that is not appropriate anymore and that we're there and we're answering. But there's some names that always pop up, the same names, mm-hmm. and, you know, we know what's going to happen with them. And we don't have any control about whether they're there or not.
Yeah. Well, we actually do have some control over it. We have to report these commenters to Facebook, and a lot of sites are using Facebook for their comments. And when they do, you basically just start reporting people. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they'll come back under a different name, but if you report them enough, then I was going to say that one of the most interesting times I dealt with professional trollers was during the Obama campaign in 2007 and 2008. Mm-hmm. And I was working, in the LGBT community, mainly doing Obama work, but also in my local community. But online, really, if it wasn't actually building the local database and doing that work here, it was within social media at the time. And we identified a group of people that were working for Burstyn Marsteller, who Hillary Clinton's campaign manager at the time was the head of that public relations firm. And it was very interesting. We could identify in some cases 100 people coming from the same IP address.
Mm-hmm.
And really just some of the crazy, incredible rumors that were being put out, the dark campaign, were always coming out of there. And what we did was go up to the campaign and make sure that some of this stuff was reported. And also there were secret discussions between the campaigns, basically calling for cease and desist or, you know, you've gone nuclear. That curtailed a lot of it.
So let's talk on a couple of subjects that probably need to be covered. We have in-house fighting. That is where and this goes with the identity policing also. Mm-hmm. Is we tend to want to tell everybody exactly what they are.
Yeah.
And some people can get quite abusive about it. And I have a couple of examples when we're talking about identity policing and we're talking about gender policing.
Mm-hmm.
which Allison sees quite a bit of, and so do I, because I'm in a lot of groups, and sexual orientation policing, and this brings up the whole bi-pan thing, and we all know how damaging that crap is. You know, and one of the things I want to say to the pansexuals out there, and this is more not directed at the individual pansexuals, so I really do believe are pretty clueless to being offensive.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk to the people that are telling them this, you know, that this sentence needs to come out of the vocabulary. I'm pansexual because bisexual is binary, then transphobic. I don't think I can stand to hear this sentence again.
I think Elio actually did a great piece, was Elio the one that did? I think he wrote the piece about what's basically taking down that sentence. And
yes.
I thought it was great. I'm definitely going to be quoting it a lot.
Now, one of our members in Binet, the Binet group, actually got some very good explanations of what pansexual is that did not involve redefining or bringing in bisexual into it at all.
Yeah.
And those are available to people. And, you know, we really want to encourage them, you know, to explain your pansexuality on its own valid merits. And, you know, and that's one of the things. And in the trans community, there's a lot of are you trans enough that goes on, right, Allison?
Right.
Yeah, the are you trans enough discussion is enough to literally create suicidal ideation. We've got, and I keep, you know, the more we educate, the better it is. But we've had, you know, the transsexual separatists, which is the group that says all the others aren't really trans. And then it's a real pain.
Trans versus genderqueer and which one's better.
That, and, you know, for me, I can't get with the term queer. I can't. It was used as a slur. I can't get with it. But if you want to identify as queer, hey, be my guest. I mean, it's not my life to live. It's yours. But
true.
I think the
only merit to the term queer is that it's just one of the few kind of all-encompassing terms that exist out there. The rest of it is very just kind of boxy and separatist, whereas at least queer can kind of be used generically to cover almost everybody. But, you know.
And I do appreciate the word queer because it does unite us all with being not hetero. To me, my main label is always going to be bisexual. Queer is just like something off to the side, you know.
Here's one of the problems, and I run into this just about every educational session I go to.
Mm-hmm.
Example, I went to a class with 25 college students. I said, how many of you, and this was a gender studies class, so this was a little frustrating. It was, how many of you know what the term transgender mean? You know, what does that term mean? And only three people had a vague idea what that meant. So when I said, well, how many of you know the term queer? And everybody was like, yeah, we all know queer. I said, well, define that term for me. And they're like, well, that's just everybody. That's, you know, anybody that doesn't exactly express normal. And it took me an hour to get this straightened out, that gender identity is not sexual orientation. They're two different things.
Mm-hmm.
So the term queer has some unfortunate ramifications that go with it. It's really not an all-inclusive term because the general public doesn't get that.
Okay, fair point.
That's who we have to convince. It's not that we have to convince the LGBT of who we are, although obviously we still have biphobia and transphobia in the LGBT. QQIRRPQTS. But
LMNOPQ.
Yeah. But the reality is we're talking to the wrong people. We need to stop talking to the internal movement and get to the 93% that have never heard these terms.
Yes.
7% of the entire U.S. population has actually heard the term transgender. Only 7%. 93%, which is a Williams Institute figure, have never even heard or met or understood that term. That's drastic. It's a huge problem when you're talking identity politics and getting equal rights. And we really need to stop the discussions within our own community and get on to, one, some respect, but two, get to educating those locations that we need to educate. I'm off my soapbox. That's my feeling. Sorry.
That's fine. I don't think we necessarily need to stop the internal discussions, but I definitely, you know, I think it's definitely good to kind of shift priorities, maybe. might be a different way to do that. I mean, I think it's important to have the internal discussions because I feel like to a certain extent it's important that we not only present a united front or a relatively united front, but also, you know, so that we make sure that, you know, because the discussion is continuing, that we are making sure that we're as inclusive as possible at all times. But you do make a very valid point.
And I think the internal discussions are good because not everybody is educated. They're new to the community, so it is a process of re-educating all the time.
I'm so glad for internal discussions because I, you know, as someone who considers myself to be a relative activist in the situation, I need education sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, I was hosting a Google Hangout for Trevor Project, HRC, True Colors. They did the State About Youth Forum, and I was hosting the Google Hangout afterwards. And it was the first time that I had to that I've ever interacted with someone using gender neutral pronouns, and I was new to it, and I just needed, you know, I just needed to be educated, and I needed to be able, you know, to have someone kind of help me navigate it because it's a situation I never found myself in before.
And that works. That really works. But when 93% of the populace don't know the terms, it doesn't matter what we throw out there.
We've got to get
the basics out to the general population because, honestly, they're the ones who are killing us. They're the ones who are committing violence against us.
Is very true.
So I think you're right. I think the internal conversations are necessary in the point that we have to have some educations going forward, especially as new terms begin popping up. And then there's that other piece of it where we need to recognize that those internal educational processes are not the end all. Sitting on Facebook discussing buy and pan is not going to fix the violence against us. It just doesn't happen that way.
Yeah, that doesn't change the rape statistics or the depression, you know, any of that.
Right.
But and sometimes they, like you said, they get into a lot of negative things directed at each, and they're useless. They break down into a disaster is what they break down into. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, a couple things, you know, be nice in a response if you can. Take the higher ground. John, these are things you want to talk about?
Well, first of all, I haven't had a chance to talk about the word queer. You know,
sorry about that.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's a term that always is changing. And I mean, years ago, lots of us used the term queer as an umbrella term and people didn't understand what it meant within the community. And, you know, it got to the point where, you just had to start saying that you're bisexual again because people outside of our community who identified as queer didn't accept that it included us. I think we're going back to these days in which we're adding letters to the LGBTQ. I don't think that's such a bad thing. I've always said that the last time that happened, I said that what would be good is to have so many letters that eventually it became the majority.
It becomes like pi. You know, there's just all infinite digits almost.
Yeah.
How do you educate with that? And I go back to this pretty consistently in a lot of the work I do. One of the things that I do is I try to stay consistently with three terms when I educate: gender identity, mm-hmm. gender expressions, and sexual orientation. I do that so that I don't get caught in umbrella terms where I can get a lot more specific. Now, my ex-spouse is blind and my son is visually impaired, mm-hmm. and to just say, okay, let's use the term disability to cover this whole spectrum, eliminates people. And I think that's what queer has done, is it's become such a muddied term that everybody goes, well, you're acting queer today, you're acting strange today, okay, your identity is queer, tomorrow you may be something else. But that doesn't encapsulate the educatable components that I think people need to catch on to. And
That is a very interesting comparison that has never occurred to me before.
Yeah, it's one of those things that there is kind of a push to say we're all queer, but the problem is we are not all one homogenous community. We are different, separate communities with different, separate needs that need to be addressed. As yes, we are part of a bigger community, and to just say we're all queer kind of muddies that down. Is that what you were trying? One of the things you were trying to say, Allison?
It
is we are distinct. We are together, but we are distinct, and we all have really issues that have to be addressed. And
oh, yeah.
Just by, you know, by saying, are we all this way, it kind of negates all of the problems that we need to face.
It erases. It actually erases the problem and the needs. And what we've seen in the disability community as a whole is that you have these small little collectives that have been put under acts like the American Disabilities Act. But the reality is the needs of the groups don't get addressed then. You get a little sprinkle of kind of equality. But for the groups that are the most affected, or the most, and I'm using this term non-politically, the most disabled, are unable to get their equal rights addressed. So you end up erasing the need, you end up erasing the actual equality rights because you can't get to a point where you can address them. So it actually stops, unfortunately, it stops the equality chain by throwing it in a huge basket that the needs are never addressed.
Yeah.
I guess so. Then, what would be the way to sort of address that? Because do you think that certain like these smaller, you know, more, I guess specific, I guess maybe is the term I want to use, communities, would it be possible for these smaller communities to sort of make advancements if they're just kind of, you know, by on their own and kind of left to those, that select group of people who are in that group, and then maybe that handful of supporters that they have?
Well, I think that doesn't work. I mean, we found that in the blind community. I mean, employment in the blind community, as an example, is less than 3% or 4%.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking the way I have been addressing it is that I keep it, you know, again, separated into three terms, the sexual orientation community. And then if I'm going to talk about my bisexuality, or if I'm going to talk about, you know, my polyamory or this kind of thing, which again isn't sexual orientation, but if that's what I'm going to discuss, then I keep that in a sexual orientation context. At the same time, when I talk about my gender identity or my transness, if you will, then I keep that within gender identity. And then I talk about gender expressions, that even if you have a gender identity and you are have a sexual orientation, which we all do, then you express that differently through the expressions.
Sure.
But by keeping it in those three categories, which is basically the legal terms that are consistently used in documents, then I'm able to distinguish to people all the various groups. Okay, in the transgender umbrella, we have A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
Got it.
And then we don't minimize or marginalize anybody in that community, but it's contained within a definition that really is a more balanced umbrella definition.
I think we could, yeah, I think that's really interesting. We can really talk about the oppression Olympics now, because some of that,
yeah.
Some of that right back into it. And, you know, I we see
the race to the bottom of the totem pole.
Yeah, there you go.
You don't know, you're cis, what the hell do you know about struggle sort of thing?
Yeah, my pain is always worse than your pain. What do you know?
Yes.
One of the things I see in the oppression Olympics is that people will use...
Obama's landing, honey.
Oh, yeah, let me go inside. Yeah, we just normally have helicopters in this neighborhood.
I would think so.
Pigs in space.
Yeah, yeah. Getting me off track.
They're oppressed. They're oppressed, those pigs in space.
No, one of the things that I see in the oppression Olympics a lot is some will use a group that they're not a part of to attack another person or another idea.
Oh, my God. Yes, I see this
and
all the time.
We saw that on Celebrate Bisexuality Day from the task force blog from a staff member. A cis woman basically saying that we're transphobic because we use the word bisexual.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it so much. You know, last fall it was, you know... Well, I'll go into Sarah Silverman a little bit because she's kind of a lightning rod to be attacked by people. And especially on trans issues. The one that I thought was the most interesting was the one last year, was the Night of a Thousand Vaginas. And it was people of color, feminists who basically said,
it's transphobic because not all women have vaginas, and
got it.
Not all people that have vaginas are female, which, yeah, I mean, I think we know that inside the community, but it wasn't coming from the trans community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I asked trans friends if they were aware of this whole Twitter war, most of them were just completely unaware of it at all. And of course, a couple of weeks ago was the video that trans women attacked for being transphobic. And see, you know, really, if anyone would have been insulted by it, it should have been trans men, because, you know, she was getting a penis so that she could make that extra 12%. And, you know, I actually post it to my trans male friends. So what do you all think about this? And I got nothing but silence. And that's one of the things that I see so much of. And, you know, it really is not it's not cool to talk for other groups you're really in a supportive way. But to basically use groups as straw men to attack a third person,
or just as an excuse to sort of kind of play this moral superiority card. It's tiresome. I see this on Tumblr all the time.
Well, don't even get me on Tumblr.
I think about disabling Anons every single day, like, and I really don't even know why I haven't already. TBH.
Okay. No, I have somebody taking care of it for me now.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
It's amazing that the reality is there's an argument in our community every day, and there's drama in our community every single day. And it doesn't matter whether it's the bisexual, pansexual argument, or the you're not trans enough argument, or, you know, someone transitions so they can make more money. I mean, I have to tell you, I've heard every freaking argument for years on this stuff, and the reality is, it's highly unproductive. It gets us nowhere, and most of it is not started internally. We have, you know, a lot of these trolls out there pushing these things and creating this.
Because we can't become a united front and fight for what we really need if we're all just bickering around with each other. That's the whole thing. And there's a right way and a wrong way to be an ally. And that was not being an ally. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that is. Patrick Richards, wrote a great piece on that, and I'll include it in the link file for us, because, yeah, you know...
Well, I think during the State of the Out Youth Forum, one of the panelists said that the best way to be an ally is just to listen. You don't even have to speak.
Yes.
Just listen. And I thought that was an incredible point, and I definitely, you know, feel like more people need to hear that.
And that's how I feel about it, too. That's the way I feel the most. It's just listen to what the other communities have to say, you know,
well,
really do.
Yeah, I think that one of the things is, you know, this term that has been identified as social justice warriors. And, you know, really, people that are just always angry and go, we're still in the oppression Olympics, really go, I'm the most oppressed, and you're oppressing everybody. You shouldn't even be allowed to speak about anything because of who you are. So the most oppressed, then you can't speak about anything. It seems to me like we're back in the old political correctness thing.
I don't even think people who do a lot, or I don't even think that the bulk of the people who do that really even, I don't think the root cause is necessarily that they're actually trying to make any kind of claim to moral superiority. I really feel like it has more to do with just someone who is an angry person and wants to have a moral crutch to use to kind of justify that anger. They now have this free pass that says, I'm allowed to be angry about whatever I want, or all, you know, because now I have this sort of claim now to moral superiority. So not only do I no longer have to deal with this anger, but I justified for having this anger. I am a better person, you know, because I am angry about these things.
And I can be a bigot because I'm the most oppressed.
See that a lot.
Righteous indignation.
Righteous indignation. Thank you. That is phrase I was trying to look for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we get a lot of that. I mean, it's not
a whole lot.
You know, somebody passed off an article today about how Jennifer Laud deserved to die because she was a fraud. I mean, and he fervently believes this. I mean, it's not like he's saying, oh, gee, you know, I have this slight attitude. It's like he wrote an entire article on how much it was a fraud and her family should be ashamed, and that you never should blame the Marine. He didn't have a problem.
Yeah. Oh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is published, and we're seeing more and more and more of this. So
yeah.
Those who feel moral superiority, James Dobson's group, the Southern Baptist Convention yesterday said that parents should basically drown us. I mean, this is...
Yeah.
This is,
I know. Poor Debbie. She was so upset. I don't know if anybody...
Debbie Jack.
Mm-hmm. She was so upset because she's got a relationship with God, and this is, and that's her roots, and it's very upsetting for her.
We declared SBC a hate group in June.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not surprised at all they're like that, but, you know, it's the moral superiority. We have it and you don't, and
yeah.
The righteous indignation.
Exactly. It makes that anger, not only does it, you know, justify that anger, but it fuels it. And it becomes this awful cycle of, you know, because I'm justified in my anger, I'm going to continue to become more angry. And it's just not productive at all.
So let's just touch on this real quickly. I don't want to spend too much time on it because my little faux pas has a lot to do with this. And we had some criticism about the hashtag for the Bisexual Awareness Week, the Bi Men and Bi Allies.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of confusion about what that was about. Thursday was not Bi Men Day. It was about a book that's been supposed to be out, should have been out years ago. There's three books for bisexual men about bisexual men. It was about the book Recognize It, Voices of Bisexual Men Speak Out. It was an anthology.
Mm-hmm.
However, instead of talking about all the great work that happened during the week, all the wonderful work that was done by volunteers on their own free time, several people, and again, I love Tumblr, decided to claim that we were just focusing on bi men and where they were going to reclaim bi allies, which was on Saturday, for the bi women because we weren't representing them. And, you know, and the bi allies were basically saying our bi allies aren't very important, and yes, they are, and we're trying to get more. You know, anyway, it was a disaster. It was like, this is one of the things that happens inside of our community. Instead of seeing the bigger picture, people start picking things apart. And they're, you know, and they do it from a place, and I don't want to say they're uninformed, but I just, they do it from a gut reaction and make it sound like it's supposed to be that it's true.
And again, it's back to that sort of initial impulse, an initial emotional impulse that kind of almost overwhelms reason.
Right. I just want to encourage people that, first of all, remember everyone is human.
Mm.
And second of all, if something sounds funny to you coming from your organizations or someone else, check the wording and investigate it and ask them directly, could you clarify that?
Oh, yeah.
Because if it doesn't sound right, then possibly that it's not presented correctly or you're misinterpreting it. So you give everybody the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, my God, yes. That's a great philosophy, not just in that realm, but just in life. Like, it's just a great habit to give people the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, it's one of my biggest problems, as John will tell you, I am very judgmental. I really am. And it's taken me years to overcome that.
It's a cognitive bias that everybody has. Fundamental attribution error. You know, whenever we perceive a fault on somebody's part, or whenever someone does something wrong, it's we automatically assume it's because of some sort of character defect, you know, on their part, as opposed to the minute we get caught doing something wrong, it's purely circumstantial. Oh, the sun was in my eyes, or I was distracted, or yada yada yada.
Or we internalize the same thing back, and well, I have a whole story about that too, but yes, it's true. And it's very true. I think we are raised that way. I mean, I don't mean from our parents. Maybe our parents, not my mother particularly, but from society teaches that if you're poor, then it's your fault.
Oh, God, that Herman Cain quote, that if you're not wealthy, it's your fault.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
They attribute things to your character when actually it's just, that's not what it is at all.
A lot of the times it's circumstantial.
Well,
John?
Yeah, I will say, like, when I saw the attacks on bi men, it really to problems that we've had internally in the bisexual community for years and years and years. And really, I think there's been a lot of progress for acceptance of bi men in this community. You know, even a couple years ago, we had a pretty big minority of bi women who just wouldn't accept bisexual men at all.
Yeah.
Or even doubted the existence of bisexual men. You know, people would talk about how great Lisa Diamond was for bi women and just ignore the fact that believe that bisexual men existed for years and years and years. You know, and it brought to me seeing that it's that activism, the Tumblr and Twitter activism against bi men just brought all of that back.
You know, they're making all kinds of claims about, well, you know, pretty close to you, that you didn't exist, that you didn't suffer the way that women do. And it goes back to this whole thing. Well, yeah, you guys are pretty oppressed, excuse me. And I don't mean just by men. I mean male identified altogether.
True.
You know, and like, well, you don't walk around with eyes in the back of your head. Well, no, from the stories I've heard from bi men, yeah, they walk around with eyes in the back of their head. They are just as aware they're in danger all the time, too. You know, and they and are the rape. I mean, this is the thing that I just don't understand. The rape and violence against bisexual men is horrendous. It's not that far behind the women's. And why they don't understand it, that we need to lift up and take care of all the members of our community and not divide us up into gender, I didn't understand the hate that came out of it.
Oh,
it was just
the worst part of it was, and this is an attack that's been around for years and years and years by parts of the bi women's community, is that men are just rapists. And you do not want to be in mixed space with bisexual men because they're even worse than other men in terms of rape. And that was one of the threads that was coming out among some of these activists. And it was just, to me, it's like, that's the kind of stuff that needs to be apologized for.
I'm going to throw up.
Yeah, I know. Well,
you know, we get that with the TERFs every single day. I mean, they literally have us on a page of rapists.
Yeah,
and
so that is their biggest thing. I'm sorry, Allison, because I get really upset about that whole, like, trans women are really all just rapist men trying to pretend to be trans women so they can hurt people. I mean, I want to cry when I see that.
Yeah, and I've heard it about bisexual men, too. Frankly, I have not met a lot of bisexual men. And I don't...
Hello.
Nice to meet you. I've met an entire group of hetero-identifying bisexual men. But I have not met a lot of bisexual men, and it's painful. And to have the rape allegation and the pedophile allegation thrown against anybody, it's a very painful thing. The TERFs have taken over my name. I mean, that's no hidden secret. But they've compared us to pedophiles and everything else out there. And it's a horrible, horrible thing to do to people, and especially from those inside our movement.
It comes from the outside, but then we are supporting each other inside. I mean, that's a crime, as far as I'm concerned. You know, we have to educate that our male-identified bisexuals are in just as much trouble as we are. And this movement is driven by women. I mean, that is what runs the bisexual movement. And, you know, we need to take care of the men that are out there fighting for us. Probably the reason you haven't met very many bisexual men, right, Allison, is that who's going to say that?
Let me tell you something. One of the reasons that the bisexual community has been led by women for so long is because there hasn't been a lot of space for us men in leadership.
Well, I think it's also just in general, like societal-wise, like it's just more female bisexuality is kind of enjoying a little bit more kind of social acceptance nowadays. As far as, as I like to call, or I said in the Ask a Bi Guy video, and that, while I'm not saying that bisexual women don't have a struggle, they most certainly do, but at least they have the kind of Katy Perry, I kissed a girl and I liked it thing going for them, which can sometimes be even worse, but at the same time, it's not the same as far as, like, you know, with men, it's like you cross that threshold of fooling around with other men and you're gay. That's it. There's no turning back.
One drop rule.
Exactly.
And also that we're not usually accused of being rapists or pedophiles.
Tis true.
Well, the other piece of this is that it comes down to gender identity bias when this is happening, and not just the accusation of pedophilia, but the... You know, women who are bisexual are considered hot, and that's very cool, and you got a term a unicorn, and, you know, you have a social acceptance level that women
your girlfriend's bi, so threesome?
Yeah. Right, oh, right. Oh, I get that all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, it's, you know, part of the issue that we have here is that there's a social construct of the masculinity that has to be. And if it is not, then there's a social punishment involved. And our own community engages in that. So it's very tough for bisexual men to stand up and say, I'm bisexual. To do that diminishes their personhood in the sight of others, where with a woman saying, hey, I'm bisexual, that actually increases her.
All right.
Yeah, it's all right. That's cool.
It's not welcome social construct, by the way.
Right.
But it is a little bit more, and I don't want to say comfortable, but it's not as scary. We do have our issues. I mean, we are abused and raped and all those things. But if you go into a bar and say you're a bisexual girl, you don't fear for to go to the bathroom and get the hell beat out of you.
Right.
Usually.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, what we're talking about is gatekeepers here. And like I said before, you know, there hasn't been a lot of space for bisexual men in leadership for many years. What I saw, especially when it came to, you know, attacking that hashtag for bisexual men, was basically gatekeepers saying that we didn't have a space in this community. We have to have space. Part of the reason that we are so far behind is because we haven't had space in the community for so many years. It took a New York Times article, a correction and a New York Times article for a lot of people within our community to really begin to recognize some of that. And even that article, there was a lot of gatekeeping attacks against bi men.
Yeah.
I think part of the problem also with gatekeeping or identity policing in general, too, is just the fact that people sort of have their own schema, their own sort of perception of the way that things are and that the way the world works. And rather, it's so much easier for these people to dismiss a perspective that contradicts that rather than take it into consideration.
Yeah.
Well, yes, because there would be flaws then, and they would have to think about
exactly.
It.
Like, it's so, you know, it's that, you know, people, they want to insulate themselves as much as possible from that cognitive dissonance. So vastly easier to just dismiss something rather than to take it into consideration.
What we're really all talking about here is fear.
And it also goes to the other hashtag that was under attack, which was bi allies. And what I thought was, One of the most interesting people to post on that day was Larry Nelson, who was partners with Brenda Howard, who is one of our founders. There are people within our community that really don't accept our straight and gay partners who are our allies.
Yeah.
There's no real, and to attack our own families who aren't bisexual, you know, really is another form of gatekeeping, that they don't have a space within our community.
And the whole week, I mean, there was so many strides in it. I mean, HRC, because we know the history there. There was a lot of work that went on with HRC, with GLAAD, the task force. There was things, there were milestones. No one seemed to want to talk about those. They wanted to talk about these hashtags.
I really don't see those Gay Inc. national organizations as allies as much as I see them as representing us but not being representative of us. And that's what we're starting to change.
Oh, boy, you guys, boy.
Whew, get a cigarette after that. It's,
I know.
Is that good for you?
Oh, God, it was great. All right. Did we get everything out and... I think we did, didn't we?
Oh, not every. I'm sure we could spend days and days on
this. We could, but I don't know when. At what point people would stop listening?
Archie,
every one of these could be a video topic for me.
It really could. Yeah. You know, how about it? That's what it's all about.
Then there was the strawberry incident. We have to talk about that.
The strawberry incident.
Oh, the cane mutiny. What? So
the cane mutiny. Oh, oh, sorry.
It's a great, we can cut that out.
If you would.
I'm like, what? I can barely get through, you know, Serrano's books right now.
How you doing? Well, God, I read like one chapter and recognized them going like, okay, now I got to go do a million other things. I'll try to come back. I haven't been back. Let's wrap this up, guys.
Okay.
Yeah.
I appreciate you being here. Our links will be provided on the website. And RJ,
Yeah, is there anything you'd like to add?
Sorry.
My battery's dying.
Oh, my God.
All right, we're almost out of here. Ready.
RJ, is there anything you wanted to add to the broadcast?
Follow me. Subscribe. Comment, rate, subscribe. I'm going to pour myself out. NotAdamandSteve.com. YouTube.com/NotAdam.
Good. And we'll put those on, like I said, on the website for everybody.
Please follow me. Please.
This is horrible. All righty. I'm going to wrap it up. Remember, you are not wrong. You are not broken. And you are not alone. You are a human being. And you are bisexual. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Oh, God.
That was great.
That was great.
We might as well have all three of you ask. Might as well. That was a good wrap-up, though.
That was great. Oh. The views expressed on the Bicast do not necessarily represent those of Binet USA or the Bicast crew.